the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. Today we're chatting with Jessica Lawler. Jess is a communications professional, writer, personal branding expert, and speaker in the Philadelphia area. After 6 years in the corporate PR world, Jessica left her job this spring to run her own communications agency, blog and brand, and to teach yoga. She blogs at jessicalawler.com about getting gutsy, stepping outside your comfort zone to reach your goals and live a life that makes you truly happy. Jessica is also documenting her step-by-step journey to becoming CEO on her blog, and you should definitely check it out. So welcome to the podcast, Jess.
Thanks for having me, ladies. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, we are really excited to talk to you. I know you're one of the first bloggers I started following when I started freelancing several years ago. So this is like kind of a dream for me to be actually talking to you and like hearing behind the scenes everything that happens in your life.
Oh, thanks so much. That's awesome.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're at right now and how you got here?
Definitely. So I'm not even sure really where to begin, but about 6 years ago, I started my career in public relations, and that was something that I studied in college. It was something that I really enjoyed. And all throughout, you know, high school and college, I kind of felt like I did what was expected of me. I got good grades. I got into college. From there, I did several internships and lots of different types of projects and creative work. And I just realized that I really wasn't as satisfied as I had hoped that I, you know, would be in my career. So that was about 6 years ago when I started working in PR. And at that same time, I decided to start blogging. And I had actually started that in college. I had a few different blogs. So I just found blogging and writing especially to be a really great creative outlet for myself. And I started with a personal blog. It's definitely not on the internet anymore. It has since been deleted. I will never speak the name of it out loud for hopes that no one will dig deep into Google's archives and find it. But actually, I started that blog because I got dumped. So I actually thanked my ex-boyfriend for that experience, because that experience really inspired me to use writing as a creative outlet to share my thoughts. And from that personal blog, things got rolling, and I eventually created a book review blog that eventually turned into my current blog, which is jessicalawler.com, and it's all about getting gutsy, stepping outside of your comfort zone. So this was something that I did on the side of my full-time job. As I mentioned, I worked in PR, had a couple of different jobs in that industry, and I really enjoyed my work at my day job, but I was really enjoying my work on the side even more. And a couple months ago, I decided to take the plunge and take that full-time.
That is amazing, Jess. Just like Ashley, I too have been following your blog for several years now, and you've been one of the inspirations for me starting my own freelance business as well on the side. So you just made that leap to full-time freelancing this spring. How have you noticed your daily kind of creative routine or creative process changing now that your time is more flexible than when you had a 9-to-5?
Oh my goodness. It is the hardest process in the world to figure out. I thought I had it all down. I thought I knew when I was most productive. I thought I knew when I had the most creative energy. But now that my week has been opened up 40, 50, 60 hours, depending on what my work week was like, I have all of this new time that I'm trying to figure out how to manage. And so prior to leaving my job, I actually did most of my creative work first thing in the morning. I would wake up at around 5 a.m., and I would spend about 3 hours working on my blog or my personal projects, working on client projects before I went to my day job. now I'm actually struggling a little bit. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm sleeping a little bit later because I have nowhere to be. I have no real deadlines, which is a good thing, but also a bad thing. And I am still finding, though, that the mornings are when I am most creative. I definitely wake up. I have a lot of energy. I feel inspired. Nothing has happened yet in my day that has set me back. And I feel like I can take on the day. Also, between the hours of 5 and 8 a.m., I'm not getting too many emails, not getting too many social media notifications. Mm-hmm. So I'm finding that I'm able to really focus and concentrate and, you know, stay focused on that one important task rather than multitasking like I tend to do throughout the rest of the day. And so I'm still trying to do my most creative writing or creative projects first thing in the morning because I know that's when I have the most energy. However, I am experimenting a little bit with when else I might be able to be productive with this new schedule of mine.
Yeah, that is so smart. Especially, I like what you said about how in the morning you don't have that distraction, because especially with you being on the East Coast, like nobody is going to be sending you emails when it's 6 a.m. your time. So I think that's just such a brilliant strategy that a lot of creatives could be tapping into, is like if you wake up before everybody else, you're not going to be distracted on social media because nothing's happening, or on your email. And you sort of have a chance, like you said, to get like that first burst of energy out on the projects that matter to you instead of getting pulled in all the different directions of whatever fires you have to put out throughout the day. And then at the end of the day, you're too drained to focus on that special project.
Exactly. And I like to refer to it as energy management. And to me, like what that means is really just maximizing my energy in the times of day that I know I'm most alert and creative to get my most pressing work done. So I'm basically prioritizing my day based on when my body and my mind work best. And so for me, that's the morning, but that might not be the case for everyone. I know that there's definitely night owls out there. I don't know how they do that. I definitely fall asleep by the time it's like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. But also I find myself in a creative lull in the mid to late afternoon, like after lunch. I definitely find myself not as creative. So I try to use that time to be social and to interact with others, whether it's having meetings or phone calls or Skype meetings, and just really trying to use that time to interact and find inspiration and creativity in other ways.
Yeah, that is excellent. I know being able to kind of arrange your day in the way that works the best for you, I imagine, is one of the best parts of being a full-time freelancer. But you were a, you know, full-time employee and a creative freelancer for many years at the same time. So when you were still working full-time, how did you make time for your own projects? You mentioned, you know, getting up early in the morning. Would you also spend, you know, lunch hours or evenings or block off, you know, Saturdays to spend on things?
That's a great question. Pretty much I ran my blog and my side business from the hours of 5 a.m. till 8 a.m. I would sometimes do a little bit of work on the weekends, Sunday afternoons, Sunday evenings, just catching up on some blog or social media items. But for the most part, I really stuck to those mornings. Sometimes I would do client meetings in the evenings after work, or quick phone calls or interviews if I was working on a writing project. For the most part, it was those early hours in the morning. And I know that becoming an early bird is not something that excites a lot of people. And I haven't been an early bird my whole life. I've definitely been someone who likes to sleep in. So this was something that I really had to train my body and my mind to do over time. It's not easy. It definitely takes a little bit of habit building. But for me, it was so worth it. So basically, all I really needed was those 2 to 3 extra hours in my day. And I think that having that set amount of time also forced me to only work on what was most important in that moment for that day. So whether it was a blog post for my own blog, a newsletter, whether it was a client project, that was what I focused on for that day. And I knew I had a set amount of time and I got it done. And if I didn't, then I had to move it to the next day. And I knew that that kind of messed up my schedule for the week. So I was really motivated to stick to that time schedule.
Mm-hmm. That's something I definitely resonate with, because I'm on kind of a similar schedule where I have my toddler takes about a 3-hour nap every day. So those 3 hours are like, I need to do everything for my blog and my business and my clients in that chunk of time. And mine's a little bit more unpredictable than yours was. But I'm wondering, how are you handling that now that you've, like, you do have all this extra time? So do you find that you're like less productive now than you used to be? Because it's, you sort of went in the reverse of what I did. I used to have all day long because I didn't have kids and I worked from home all day. And I found that once I had Hadley and had those constraints on my time, I got so much more productive and so much more efficient. So I'm curious to hear how you're sort of combating that. You know, they say that online work can sort of expand to fill up however much time you have available. So are you doing anything to make sure that that doesn't happen to you?
You are so right, Ashley. Online work definitely does expand. I have definitely learned that in the past couple of months. That has been a huge challenge for me. And I'm also a little bit of a procrastinator, which I'm not proud to admit, but I am. And I seem to work well under pressure and under deadlines. So I think that having those couple hours really did work for me. So now I for sure struggle. I find myself getting towards the end of the week and still having a pretty long to-do list because I've somehow been able to fill my days with other tasks that aren't always the most important ones, but still feel somewhat productive. But yeah, I'm experimenting now with how I can become a little bit more disciplined. So I'm working on scheduling out my days a little bit more by the hour so that I can, you know, really focus in on one task. I'm finding it really easy to get distracted and to try to multitask. And for me, multitasking just has never worked. I just pop from one thing to the next and then it's hard to find my concentration again. So for sure, something I'm working on. If anyone has tips, I would love to hear them. but yeah, I think that when I have that set amount of time, I'm really able to buckle down and get to work. So I'm somehow making it work. I'm procrastinating a bit, but it's happening.
Sometimes that's all you can say for whatever season of life you're in as well. It is happening. It is moving forward. And that could be good. I think sometimes you just need to take a little bit of time to readjust. And like you said, it was a big, big jump from being a full-time employee and a freelancer to now, you know, quote unquote, just being a freelancer. And you have this 40, 50, 60 sometimes hours and no commute anymore. It would be like really indulgent, I think, if all of a sudden I quit my job and had, you know, quote unquote, nothing to do for that 8 or 9 or 10 hours a day that I used to spend elsewhere.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, something very humbling and something that I realized is that I actually feel like I am working harder now, though, because even if I, so basically my days have been structured where I wake up, I'm waking up a little bit later, I'm starting my day around 6 a.m. instead of 5 a.m., and I'm working pretty much from 6 a.m. until around like 11 a.m. or noon, and then I usually take some time off for lunch and for a workout, and then in the afternoon have some meetings, a little bit more social, that kind of thing, but that's still a lot of hours of dedicated work time. I realized when I was at my day job, there were so many hours that were spent in often pointless meetings that dragged on for much longer than necessary, or just general chit-chat with coworkers, which is definitely nice and necessary. But when I really looked at the amount of time that I was probably actually working during my eight-hour workday, definitely was not 8 hours. So I'm trying to be a little bit gentle with myself, knowing that I have this whole span of hours ahead of me when I wake up in the morning, and just knowing that I am the boss of my own day, my own career, my own life, and I can kind of pick and choose when I work. And so I'm trying to get those work hours in early in the morning so that if I do want to be a little bit more indulgent in the afternoon, I can.
Yeah, so you had mentioned, Jess, that you enjoyed that, like the sort of office chit-chat where you just sort of have that interaction with your coworkers throughout the day and you have maybe people stopping by your office and meetings, and even though you might be working on projects that are by yourself, you still have a lot of interaction with other people that is really missing when you're working from home. And that can be its own type of drain on your energy when you're not talking to somebody else who gets what you're going through or who has been working on the same project alongside you. So do you have any tips for intentionally keeping in touch with your community, whether that's online or in person, when you're working on your own as a freelancer?
Definitely. I have felt really lucky that in these past few months running my own business, I actually haven't felt lonely or isolated yet. I think I've been really working hard to stay in touch with my community. So a couple different things that I do. One, I have an accountability partner. So her name's Sarah. Sarah Ferrandina, a lot of you guys who listen may also be aware of her.
Yes.
She, mm-hmm. Yeah, so she's my accountability. I love her too. She's wonderful. So we chat every Monday morning, and that's a really great way to kick off the week. So we talk about our goals, what we accomplished in the week prior, what we're looking to accomplish in the week ahead, anything that we can help each other with, what we can check in with each other on. So that's a really nice way to kind of start the week with some interaction. And I also am very active on social media, so I'm constantly chit-chatting throughout the day. I'm really into Snapchat lately, and I find that that's a really fun place that even though you're not actually interacting with someone, when you're watching a story, you feel like you're part of their day, kind of behind the scenes in their life. So that's something that gives me that sense of interaction, even if I may not actually be talking to someone. Mm-hmm. And also, as I mentioned, I've been structuring my days where I do my creative work in the morning, and then I spend my afternoons being a little bit more social. So pretty much almost every afternoon, except maybe one or two days a week, I've had either an in-person meeting or a phone call. And I've been really trying to do a good job of keeping in touch with my network, especially in these first few months of my business. So I have a networking spreadsheet that I check in with to make sure that I have talked to all people that I want to stay in touch with. And actually, through this process of quitting my job, I've developed stronger relationships with a lot of creative entrepreneurs and people who I considered mentors, and have built a couple more accountability partnerships as well. So I'm scheduling kind of regular meetings with those people to kind of check in and have that social interaction that you mentioned. So I've been feeling pretty lucky that I haven't experienced that yet.
I'm so impressed with that system that you have, like that you've got like a networking spreadsheet and like accountability partners built into your day. How did you and Sarah get started being accountability partners with each other? Because that's definitely something I could use in my day. And I'm sure there's lots of other people out there who would love to get started with something like that.
Yeah, I would highly recommend some kind of accountability partnership. So I had been part of a mastermind group before, and I felt, and that was a really great experience. So with a mastermind, it's usually four or five or six, depending on how many people. But it's more of a group session where we would get on Skype and we would all talk to one another about the projects we were working on. And I found that to be really useful, but it was also challenging to kind of keep up with everyone's schedule. So from that, I kind of decided that maybe a one-on-one accountability partnership might be a better fit for me. Sarah and I have been friends for a while. We actually were friends online, and then we crossed paths in our old day jobs. We both used to work in the tourism industry, and we went to the same conference in Texas like 5 or 6 years ago. And from there, became really good friends and kept in touch online. And I'm not even sure how it actually came up, but we decided that we should become accountability partners and check in with each other because we were both working on similar projects. So Sarah owns her own copywriting business. I have my blog and now my communications consulting business. So we thought that we would have really good synergy with one another. And the way that we decided to structure it was just to have a quick 15, 20 minute, sometimes it's as short as 10 minute, sometimes it's as long as 30 minute phone call every Monday morning to chat together. And we kind of developed a structure over time, but the main things that we discuss, we kind of recap on our past week, talk about our successes, what we did get done, what we didn't get done. Then we talk about what we are hoping to get done in the week ahead, what's on our plate, what our biggest projects are, what we're really excited about. And then we ask each other how we can help one another with that project. So whether sometimes I'll say to Sarah, like, I really need to get this blog post done by Thursday and I need to send out a newsletter by Thursday night. And she will say, cool, well, I'll check in with you on Wednesday and see how you're progressing with that. And that's really helpful for me because I don't want Wednesday to come around and have Sarah ask me how I'm doing on it and to have to tell her, well, I haven't started it yet, or it's not looking like it's going to happen. So just knowing that she is going to check up with me, and she's a really good accountability partner, she actually does. And that is for sure motivating to me to help me keep moving forward. So it's been a really great partnership. We've actually been doing this now for more than 2 years, which is kind of crazy. So every Monday morning we start our day together. It's wonderful.
Well, and that's much better than starting your Monday with like crazy people on social media or a client call that you've not been looking forward to or something like that. So I think that's a great way to kick off the week.
Me too.
So kind of switching gears a little bit, let's talk about your blog, which is kind of where all of this came from. So your current blog, the current iteration of your blog, I guess, is all about getting gutsy. And you're always sharing stories of reaching outside your comfort zone to see what else life really has to offer. Have there been any you know, major get gutsy moments that have really shaped your career or even strengthened your creative process, even kind of like long before, you know, quitting your day job?
That's such a tough question. So I guess to just kind of go back for a second to what getting gutsy means to me. So this phrase get gutsy kind of developed over time with my blog community. And it was the name of my newsletter and it was something that I talked about on the blog, but really the people who read my blog, who are also wonderful, actually kind of really got behind that phrase and that saying and really turned it into my blog's brand, which is really cool. So to me, the definition of getting gutsy is stepping outside of your comfort zone to live a life that makes you truly happy. And that can mean a lot of things. So a lot of people think that getting gutsy means doing something crazy and big, like going skydiving or quitting your job. And yes, for sure, those things are gutsy. But there are so many small things that you can do each and every day that just make you a little bit uncomfortable. So just like those little butterflies that you feel in your stomach, like that is getting gutsy no matter what you're doing. So what that's looked like for me has been a lot of different things. So before I even had the blog, I decided to take charge of my health. After I graduated college, was 40 pounds heavier, was living a completely different lifestyle and realized I wasn't happy and decided to take some positive steps to change that. And so I started running, and from running I found yoga and all these different things that kind of put me on this different path. And that's where I really developed this positive mindset that led me to wanting to inspire others to step outside of their comfort zone. And, you know, since then, getting gutsy has meant stepping on a stage to speak at an event or joining a podcast interview or trying a new style of yoga class. It can be anything really silly. And now that I'm running my own business, I feel like I'm getting gutsy every day when I'm speaking with potential clients and sharing my rates and like doing all of these crazy business things that I never thought I would have to deal with, like invoicing and taxes and all these things that are so challenging to me. They really take me out of my comfort zone. And that may sound silly, but they're things that make me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I would say that emailing people to be guests on this podcast in its first season have been some gutsy moments for Ashley and I. Because, you know, you spend so much time crafting that perfect email and you send it off. And then you kind of just like wait with this expectation of almost dread, I think, sometimes. Like, oh, they're never going to respond. Or, you know, and I don't even consider myself an anxious person. But I always feel like when you put one of those big asks out into the world that sometimes you're just kind of waiting for things to happen, and it can be kind of a stressful moment of life.
Absolutely. Emailing can be completely gutsy. Sending emails is scary when you're sending them to people that you really want to get on their radar, or people that you just want to get to know, for sure. I can completely understand that.
Yeah. Well, I say that picking up the phone is gutsier than email, so I stick to email.
That is true.
Yeah, I'm not a phone person at all either. I would totally stick to email as well. But we talk about that whole theme of fear in creativity and in the work that you're passionate about here on the podcast quite a bit. And I think that getting gutsy really gets at the spirit of like overcoming that fear in order to explore the things that you're passionate about, even if they don't necessarily turn into some big like life's accomplishment, I guess. So, I mean, the whole idea that it's worth sitting down to write, even if you never get a book deal, or it's worth, you know, pursuing painting or something like that, even if you never like become an artist in a gallery. So I'm wondering if you have any tips for creatives who are having trouble getting gutsy in their own lives.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think that, as you mentioned, it's easy to get caught up in looking forward to the future and thinking of what it will be like when we have that book deal, or when our book is out in a bookstore on shelves, or when you see your painting hanging in a gallery. It's so easy to kind of look at that end result And it's much, much, much harder to sit here in this moment when you're in your pajamas with a cup of coffee and you have a blank Word document in front of you or a blank canvas or a blank whatever it is that you're passionate about, and you actually have to sit down and do the thing. That is what is much, much harder. But I think that the key is really in just getting started. And I think that is what so many people are fearful of. They're fearful of that very moment when you're sitting there with that blank document in front of you and you're scared to write that first word or take that first brush stroke. And I find that once we get past doing that first step, it's often easier to find some momentum and to keep going and to really look at things in very small steps. It's so easy for me to get caught up in like the ideas I have for my blog and where I'd like to see it go and how I'd like it to develop. And I have all these ideas and I want to tackle them all right now, but I'm trying to remind myself that those goals that I have a couple years down the line start with writing tomorrow's blog post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that idea of focusing on like just doing the work instead of necessarily chasing after that end result, because the beauty and the growth in your own life really comes from doing the work. It doesn't come from those big high-level achievements for most of us. And so sort of going along with that same theme of how creatives can find that sort of courage and overcome fear in their lives, one of the other big things that so many creatives struggle with is self-promotion and putting themselves out there online or in whatever venue makes sense for them. It might also be in person. And that's something that I think you're really good at. Like, you make those really genuine connections with people, and like, you've got your networking spreadsheet, you're all organized about it, but you never come across as like overly self-promotional or sleazy or anything like that. So I would love to hear your tips for creatives who are not sure how to get started doing that or who just feel icky or salesy about it.
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. I'm really glad that that comes through on my blog and in my community. But the way that I think that I have been able to share my own work without coming across as salesy or self-promotional is that I'm truly just telling my story. And I think that that is how a lot of people need to kind of reframe their thinking around self-promotion. It's not about selling your thing or having people think that you're awesome. It's more about sharing your story and seeing where you can find connection with others. And that's really what drove me to start my blog, was that I wanted to share my life. I wanted to share the things that I was learning and experiencing. And I find so much joy and there's so much reward in hearing from others who are going through those same things. And so for me, it's all just about becoming vulnerable and being honest and open and sharing my truth and sharing my story. And so I find that it's in the way you phrase things. So when I'm talking about, well, for example, just recently, I launched a new page on my site regarding my yoga teaching and all the things that I have in my yoga business. And instead of saying, you know, like new page or like come to my yoga class, I kind of framed it more in the way of saying, here are 7 things I'm really excited about right now in my yoga world, and kind of shared from there the things that I was learning and that I was looking forward to. So I think it's more in the way that you kind of approach and frame what you're doing, mm-hmm. is how you can kind of set yourself apart from others who are being a little more salesy and promotional. But I would say that, you know, it takes time to kind of find your voice when you're doing that, but I would encourage people to get started with promoting their work, because you are the CEO of your own business. You're the CEO of your own life, and no one else is going to care about your work as much as you do. So you have to be proud of it, and you have to be ready to share it in whatever way makes you most comfortable.
That is a really good point. And kind of even switching gears again, there's so many things we can talk to you about. You're like the perfect guest for us to have on the show. So you do a lot of content management and content development for other companies, other blogs and different clients and things. So how do you balance coming up with ideas for client blogs while still trying to come up with ideas for your own blog? Because sometimes ideas can be exhausting.
Ideas can be exhausting. And I've quickly learned, especially now that I'm taking my blog and business full time, that it's often easiest to push my own blog and my own brand to the back burner when client work is on the line. And that's something that I've been really trying to stress to myself, is to treat myself like a client and to spend just as much time on my own work as I do on theirs. So with that being said, I'm still trying to figure out the balance, but I would say that I try to prioritize my own blog as I'm at first thing in the morning. So like when I wake up, I do my blog first, and I only blog twice a week. So, or 2 to 3 times a week, depending on what's going on. But I try to spend the days that I am posting working on my blog before I tackle any other work. And you know what? Like, ideas come from everywhere, and I'm getting, it's not like I sit down and I'm like, now I'm going to brainstorm. Like, now it's time for my idea session and like write down all these ideas. My ideas are coming to me when I'm in the shower, when I'm at yoga, when I'm going for a run, when I'm driving. And they always come at the most like inopportune times when I really can't like write them down or like jot them into my phone.
Yes, so I really, every single time.
I really need to get one of those like shower boards or like something crazy. But the ideas are coming to me, you know, throughout the day, and not like they happen all the time, but when they do come to me, I write them down right away and try to put them away for the future so that when I am sitting down for some client work and I need to come up with ideas, I have something to pull from. But I'm also getting a lot of inspiration from other places. So I spend a lot of time consuming content, whether it's other blogs about the industry that I'm working in or podcasts, videos. I'm really into a lot of professional development and learning more, and that's, education is really important to me. So I'm always finding new ideas from consuming content as well.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you said that you have to treat your own blog like it's one of your clients, because that's something that I've really struggled with over the years too, is leaving my own blog until the last minute, and then my content isn't as good as the content that I'm writing for other people. And it's like, wait a minute, no, that's not how it's supposed to work. Like, you need to schedule this in.
Exactly. And I realized that one of the reasons that's so important for me to focus on my own blog and my own content is because my blog is the reason I was able to quit my job. All of the clients that I built from my side hustle had found me through either my blog or through social media. So I know that my blog and my website is my greatest pipeline for future clients. And so I'm trying to remind myself of the importance of that if I don't maintain that, you know, my reputation could go down, because that is how people are finding me. Mm-hmm. So I need to kind of keep up my work. That's my greatest portfolio piece. That's my resume right there. So I need to make sure that I am maintaining it and bringing the best content, as you said, to that platform.
So while you're working so hard to, you know, try to ramp up your freelance work so that you could at some point quit your job, you were also on this really cool journey of becoming a yoga instructor. And I know you've mentioned on your blog before that, you know, you thought that, you know, yoga wasn't for you, or it wasn't like real exercise compared to the running and things that you were doing. And so you started yoga, and it kind of surprised you with how much you loved it. You've been pretty transparent about all of that. So can you tell us a little bit about your yoga journey, and then maybe the ways that yoga has impacted other areas of your life and maybe even your creativity?
Yes, absolutely. So yoga has completely changed my entire world in so many different ways. So like you said, I didn't think yoga was for me. I got dragged to a class by my friend, and I didn't think I would like it, but after a couple of classes, I really fell in love with it. And what I really fell in love with was that yoga is not just an exercise, although it is a wonderful exercise, especially if you're practicing a more vigorous flow type of class, which is what I teach. But it's also amazing for inspiration and for your mind and stress management and anxiety management, and like you said, creativity. So I'll get to that in a second, but just kind of going back to my yoga journey. So I started practicing yoga pretty regularly, and after about a year of practicing, I had just seen so many benefits in my body and my mind and my spirit that I started thinking about becoming a yoga teacher. And I applied for a program, and I was accepted and started that journey, and I blogged the whole thing, and it was such a wonderful experience. And I really was excited to learn that as a yoga teacher, I can also inspire others. So something that I really love about where I practice and the style of yoga that I teach is that we're able to be creative, not only just in the physical movements, but also in the messages that we bring to class. So all of the teachers that I learned from often will bring inspirational themes or quotes or poems to class to help you kind of set a tone or to set an intention for your own personal practice, something to help you kind of focus inward. And I really loved that. And I felt like it aligned really well with a lot of the content that I was writing on my blog. So I was excited to see that creatively I could use stuff I'd written on my blog in my yoga class, but also things that I heard in my yoga class I could bring to my blog. So it's actually been really nice for both parts of my life. But that's one of my favorite parts of being a teacher now is looking for those words that I can bring to my students that will change their day or change, you know, their practice or change their world. I actually had a student recently come up to me after class and tell me that the quote I read the week before inspired her to go home and apply for a business license that she had been thinking of doing. And the quote that I brought that day to class just really like inspired her to finally take that step to make her dream a reality. And I had no idea when I became a yoga teacher, you know, you think of just like people coming to class to like get a workout in. I never thought that I could have the power to impact someone's career. And so that was really inspiring to me. And I look forward to seeing where I can take that. But I found so much creativity through my yoga practice and through yoga teaching. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, I really miss doing yoga, actually, because of what you said about exactly that, where you're intentional and you're focusing inward, and then you spend like an hour clearing your mind, and you just feel so refreshed and so energized after that, because I think that the busyness of our world and the distraction of our world can sometimes be the enemy of creativity and of new ideas. And yoga was like the perfect space for me to just relax and unwind. And I used to go quite often before I got pregnant with Hadley. And then once I reached like the midway point in my pregnancy, I wasn't really able to do yoga anymore without falling over. So I haven't gone back since then because it's hard to go to yoga when you have a toddler and do yoga at home when you have a toddler who's like, oh, what? Mommy's on the floor, so I get to crawl all over her. So that's something I would really love to get back to, but I can totally see how inspiring that would be for you and for anybody else who's in your class, like you said, who's you're in this position now to share sort of those life lessons and bring that get gutsy mindset to your students, which is just fantastic. So as you are a yoga instructor now, you're the one who's in charge of always coming up with those new, I don't know what you call them, I guess, like new flows or new yoga programs. Do you ever have trouble coming up with that? Or how do you stay creative when you're trying to come up with like new class routines?
I do have trouble with that sometimes. And it's like in any other area of creativity in your life, sometimes you're just feeling really uninspired. So when I am feeling uninspired, I go to a lot of different sources. Instagram has been really wonderful for helping me to find both yoga quotes and different yoga poses and flows. I also love Pinterest for that. And I also go back to my yoga textbooks that I use for teacher training. But a lot of times I draw inspiration for what I'm going to teach from what's happening in my personal life. So when I quit my job, my theme for that week was stepping out of your comfort zone. And I actually told my class, like, hey, like, I just quit my job today. And, you know, I try to be honest with them just like I do on my blog, honest and open and vulnerable. And, you know, I don't want the class to be about me, but I do try to share a personal story that kind of will help them to kind of to think about how they might have experienced that in their own life. So I draw a lot from what's happening with me personally, but also what's happening seasonally. So whenever we just, you know, had a new season start with the start of spring, and I did a flow all around, you know, starting a new season and what that means and how we can create a blank slate. So I'm often drawing inspiration from both my personal life, but also what's happening in the world around us.
That is a really great point. I think the whole lovely thing about blogging that I have found over the last couple of years is that it doesn't seem to matter where you're at. There is someone else out there who is in a similar place. And by just kind of writing out the words that you didn't think were important or didn't think were a big deal and kind of pushing them out into the world, they find the people that they need to find, or the people that need them find those words. And I imagine yoga is a very similar experience for you and for your students. I know there's been several yoga classes that I've taken in the past few years, and that even a year, year and a half, or 2 years later, I vividly remember, you know, being on that mat and having that like moment of inspiration, or that moment that something like just hits you the right way and you're like, okay, going forward, like, I'm not the same person that I was before I walked in here.
Absolutely. I think that's what's so powerful and transformative about a yoga practice. So I highly encourage, if you are not currently a yogi, to definitely give it a try. And, you know, it takes time to find the style of yoga that resonates mm-hmm. with you, or the teacher that resonates with you. And I think that was my problem, and that's why I kind of dismissed yoga at the beginning. But when you really kind of take the time to find your place, you can really reap the benefits.
Yeah. And if you're in, is it the Philadelphia area
yep.
where you're teaching, Jess? Mm-hmm. If you're in Philadelphia, I would recommend you go take one from Jess, because that would be an awesome way to make the internet branch into real life.
Yes. So.
At the end of each episode, then, we do a short little book club. We call it our mini book club, because almost everyone that we interview loves to read. And Ashley and I are huge readers. I don't know what I would do if like books were not in my life. It would be a very sad day. So for you, coming from a PR background and now a yoga background, I guess, what are some titles that you could share with us that have either inspired your creativity or some of your favorite books of all time?
Sure. So I have a couple that I'd like to chat about. So one that I read recently that I found really inspiring, both in a business sense, but also for my creativity, was Yes, Please by Amy Poehler. So the fabulous Amy Poehler. I just recently binge watched Parks and Recreation. So I was on this like Amy Poehler kick, and I had to read her book. But I just found that book to be so inspirational. So it's obviously her memoir, but it also dives into a lot of just different like inspirational topics specifically for women. And I just kind of tore through that book when I was on a flight for a vacation. So I highly recommend that one.
Yeah, I also read that one this spring and enjoyed it. Like you said, it's not just a comedic memoir. She talks about, you know, writing and the process and how doing the work is the actual work and not talking about the work. And it was just really, really good for me in the moment that I read it.
Definitely. And I'm also really into fiction. And I recently read this awesome book that I still can't stop thinking about. It's called Maybe in Another Life by Taylor Jenkins Reid. And basically the book starts off with this main character, and she is having this experience at a bar, and she has to make a choice of what she's going to do next. And so the book then alternates chapters with the two decisions that she could have made in that moment. And so you see where her life would have gone if she had done one thing, and where her life would have gone if she did another thing. And it was kind of about how out in the universe, like, there may be like two versions of ourselves, like living completely different lives with different people. And it was just so fascinating. And I was like tearing through the book, trying to see like at the end, like which universe was actually real. And I won't give away the ending, no spoilers here, but it was a fascinating read. So highly recommend.
That sounds so interesting. Like, as you're describing it, I'm like, I need this book. And I've never heard of it, too. Like, usually I've heard of most of the books that people come and talk about here with us, and I've never heard of this one, so I'm so excited to put that on my list.
Yeah.
Yeah, me neither.
I actually saw that one at the library. Like, I, like, walked into my physical library in my neighborhood, which I never do, and, like, just browsed the shelves, and it popped out at me, and I read it. And like you said, I'd never heard of it either. No one's blog mentioned it or anything like that, so definitely an awesome read. And then another book I read over the summer that I absolutely loved, again, like, I'm on this Parks and Rec kick, was Modern Romance by Aziz Ansari. And have either of you read this book?
No.
I did for book club this last year, and I was really skeptical going into it because I have been married for almost a decade now, and I didn't ever really do the dating thing either. My husband and I met in high school and just kind of became best friends and started dating and got married from there. And so, like, I literally have never dated, and especially not since, like, the internet and text messaging have become a thing. So it was eye-opening to me. Even, like, I know, Ashley, you probably would not have read it either, but it's impressive, the things that people go through today.
Yeah, for sure. So, Abby, I'm very happy that you have not had to go through this lovely world of online dating. So I am a single girl, and so modern romance is very interesting to me. But what I really liked about it was that, again, like, you think Aziz Ansari is this, like, awesome comedian, but he's actually very smart. And he did a lot of research for this book. He worked with a lot of psychologists on the book, and he dives into lots of, like, stats and information about not only how we date here in the U.S., but also how people date in other parts of the world, which was absolutely fascinating to me. But the book also does have Aziz's, like, signature comedic spin on it, so it's really enjoyable. I did not listen to the audio version, but I heard that that is, like, particularly funny because it's Aziz reading it, so
I heard the same thing.
So I highly recommend it, whether you're single or not. It's definitely a really interesting glimpse into what dating is like in this current world we live in.
Yeah, it gave me a lot more empathy for all of my single friends. Like, even though they weren't asking for my empathy, like, I now offer it to them on a silver platter.
Yeah.
That sounds like something I'd read, just because, like, sociology and psychology kind of stuff, like, fascinates me. And I'm kind of similar to you, Abby, where, like, I met my husband in high school and we didn't date for quite a while, but we were friends for a long time before we dated and then got married. And I never even, I think it was on your blog, Jess, because you did a series about dating sort of in the modern age. And I had never even thought about how complicated it would be, like, with texting and just, like, that whole online world. Like, are you Facebook official and all that, like, ridiculous stuff that we have to think about now that people in previous generations haven't had to deal with.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're sorry. We're sorry. You're still dealing with that. But yeah, Ashley, I think you would enjoy it because it just was just mind-boggling. And he, like Jess said, he looks at different cultures too. And I had no idea what dating was like in Japan. And let me tell you, you have not heard of this before.
Yes.
So that's all we're going to say on the podcast.
Yeah, let that be your reason to pick up the book.
Yes.
All right.
So then, what are you planning to read in the near future now that you are a solo freelance lady, Jess?
Yeah, so I have a lot of books on my to-be-read list, and I'm trying to do a much better job of forcing myself to read. I love to read, but I find it so hard to find time, and I try to read before bed, but I fall asleep the second my head hits the pillow, so I'm really struggling with reading time. But a couple of books on my to-be-read list, one of them is Ask Gary Vee by Gary Vaynerchuk. So I may have been living under a rock for the past several years, but I only recently discovered Gary Vaynerchuk and his work, and I am completely fascinated by him. He's very active on Snapchat. If you are active on that, he basically documents his entire life. He does a YouTube show called Ask Gary Vee. He has someone walk around and film him basically everywhere he goes, and they put it into blogs that they release once a week or twice a week. And it's just fascinating, but he's really smart, and he's an entrepreneur, and he's a businessman, and he knows a ton. And he really thrives in the setting where he does Q&A. And so he put a book together where he just answers questions, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. Do you guys follow his work at all?
No, I have heard of him, and I feel like I've probably heard him interviewed around on other podcasts, but I had no idea that he was so open with his life, like having people like follow him around everywhere and like vlogging and on Snapchat all the time and that. Like, I had no clue.
No. Yeah, I've read a couple of his articles here and there and that kind of thing. I've not quite jumped on the bandwagon yet, mostly because he does. He puts out so much content that I can't keep up with it, and so I ignore all of it, which is probably not the best strategy in life.
Yeah. No, and I think, like, we find people at certain, like, seasons of our life when we need them, and I didn't really, I guess, need his advice until just recently now that I'm starting my own business. Like, I'm finding his words, they're really resonating with me. So I found him recently, and I'm really into it, so maybe not for everyone, but it's working for me. And something else that's on my list is the life-changing magic of tidying up. And this is something that I've seen talked about like so much, and I haven't read it. And honestly, I don't even know if I really need to read it because I feel like I know the concept behind it. And I've heard about it on so many podcasts that I feel like I have read it. But I really love the idea behind it, which I think is that if there's something in your life that doesn't bring you pleasure, like get rid of it, whether it's a piece of clothing or something in your house. And I recently purged like all my stuff because I'm planning to move in the next few months. So I'm trying to declutter. And I really tried to like take that advice to heart. Like, does this dress bring me pleasure? No, it goes. And it was a really refreshing experience to go through all of my stuff. I was hanging on to like notes that I passed to my friends in seventh and eighth grade. Like, I don't need those anymore. And lots of different things. So I feel like that book might help me to even further declutter my life.
Yeah, I feel very similarly about that book where you said you've heard about it so many times that you feel like you've read it. That's kind of how I feel about it now.
And yes,
I'm actually resisting reading it a little bit because I'm naturally, I'm not a super organized person by nature, but I really dislike clutter. So because I'm not very organized, I need to not have very many things or they will be everywhere and I can't handle the clutter. So I'm afraid that if I read this book, I would like go overboard because I think I already have gone overboard before. Like when I was recently postpartum with my first baby, it was like I got rid of a bunch of clothes because I was like, oh, these don't make me happy. Like they don't fit right. And 6 months later, they would have fit and I kind of missed having them. So I sort of take that the decluttering concept a little bit farther than most people do. So I'm like afraid to read it because I don't know what'll happen to my house.
I hear you.
Yeah. I haven't read that one either, but I know I've been following several minimalist blogs for 3, 4, or 5 years now. So I kind of feel like you, Ashley. I've got a pretty good handle on my clutter. We downsized from a house to an apartment about 2 years ago, and so I really had to get rid of some stuff then. And we're going to be moving again, like you, Jess, in a couple of months. So I've been very vigilant about, like, do I absolutely have to buy this thing? No, that I'm not going to buy it yet. So I don't know. I don't know if I need to read the clutter book either.
Yeah, I think we've just kind of like distilled it down to exactly what it is.
Yeah, I think we did.
Well, cool. Have you been reading anything great, Ashley, lately?
I'm sort of in between books right now, which is rare because I usually read several at a time, but I have 2 books on hold at the library right now that I think are both going to come in within the next few days, and I'm afraid to start something because otherwise I won't be able to get my library books done on time. So I did just finish reading 6 of Crows, which was the most recent book put out by Leigh Bardugo, who wrote the Grisha trilogy. And 6 of Crows was better than her first few books, in my opinion. It was really fantastic. If you're into young adult fantasy, it was a really, really great book. It was sort of like Ocean's 11 meets young adults, like other world magic stuff. It was pretty cool.
That sounds amazing. Ocean's 11 might be one of my favorite like action-y movies. So I'm going to have to jump on that one.
Yes.
I have been reading nothing, which is really sad to say. Even like over the Easter weekend, we're recording this right after Easter, guys. I just like binge watched. I can't even say those words. Season 5 of Downton Abbey is what I let myself do. So now I'm only like 1 year behind the rest of the world. We'll see.
Nice.
Yeah. So what about you, Jess? Have you been like indulging in any awesome television or movies in your, you know, less time constrained life?
Oh, I make time for my shows. Yeah. So I was super excited about Fuller House coming out earlier this year. And I blocked an entire weekend and I binge watched Fuller House. I was a huge Full House fan. I love 90s TV. And I really enjoyed it. I think they did a great job with the remake. Did either of you guys watch?
It's on my list, but I have not watched it yet. No.
No, I haven't either. I don't think that my husband would like to watch it. And I tend to only watch television when he's watching television. Otherwise, I'm trying to like do creative things.
Got it.
So it may take me a couple years to get there.
It's delightfully cheesy.
Well, good. That's what Full House always was.
Sounds like it's perfect then.
Yes.
It does. Well, Jess, if you don't mind, go ahead and tell our audience where they can find you around the internet and how they can maybe sign up for one of your yoga classes.
Definitely. So you can find me on my blog, jessicalawler.com. And if you're looking for just yoga stuff specifically, it's jessicalawler.com/yoga. And on there, I have links to all my social media sites, my newsletter. I'm really active on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. And I'm also really into Snapchat. So if you are on Snapchat, please add me. My username is Jessica Lawler.
Yeah, you've got me really intrigued about Snapchat now because I am not on Snapchat. I mean, I'm so behind you guys. Like, I just got an Instagram like 5 months ago. So so Snapchat has not been on my radar, but you make it sound so fun. Now I'm thinking about it.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
We're going to get you on there.
I have also been a non-adopter of Snapchat. I just keep telling myself, like, I can't handle one more social media channel to make content for. So, I don't know. We'll see. But it sounds like it's working for you, Jess, and that is the important part of social media.
Exactly. And even if you guys don't want to be on Snapchat, it's a great place to consume content. So you can definitely join and just watch stories. You don't have to actively make them. But believe me, once you start watching them, you're going to want to create your own.
Yeah, so thank you so much for chatting with us tonight and for hopefully inspiring some fellow creatives to get outside their comfort zones.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Thank you, Jess.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.